This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
If you like true crime, dark history, the haunted and paranormal, then we think you'll like Ghost Town.
Ghost Town is hosted by me, Rebecca Lieb.
And me, Jason Horton.
We cover both notorious and obscure true crimes,
the haunted, paranormal, and unexplained,
and the dark history of everything from world events to pop culture.
There are new episodes of Ghost Town every Wednesday and Friday.
Find out for yourself what Vulture.com called essential listening, and one listener called a total waste of time.
So pause the podcast you're listening to right now,
and go subscribe to Ghost Town for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And at ghosttownpod.com.
Warning. This episode contains details that some listeners may find disturbing. Halloween. A night where the lines between the living and the dead blur, and we celebrate spirits, both playful and sinister. It's a time for costumes, tricks, and tales of ghosts that make us shiver, but only in celebration. After all, the scariest stories are supposed to stay safely locked in the world of make-believe. But not every story regarding All Hallows' Eve is fiction. Tonight, we explore the Halloween murder of Lillian Armstrong from 1963, a case where the tricks were deadly and the killer was never caught. This is a study of strange. Happy Halloween. Welcome back to the show. I'm Michael May, and this week I'm joined by two people. It's not often I have two guests on the show. TJ's been on before, but can I have both of you guys introduce yourselves? Dee, why don't you go first?
Okay. Hello. My name is Denise Pantoja. I am a producer, actor, writer. I'm a multi-hyphenate. I'm a real badass.
Yeah, you are.
I'm kidding. I'm not. I'm a total dork.
No, we love that. We love that. And TJ, go for it.
Yeah, TJ Rotel, writer, producer, actor, host, director, multi-hyphenate, giant nerd.
Gotta be multi-hyphenates, and you gotta be a nerd nowadays to make it in this business.
You gotta have a hook, right? You know.
Listen, I was a dork before it was cool. Okay.
Yeah. Me too.
I'm leaning deep to that jack of all trades, master of none mindset here.
Yes, and one of the reasons I thought of having you guys on Halloween is you've been doing some stuff online. You've been doing some streaming things. You've been all this like hoity-toity new age kind of new age is the wrong term. That makes you think of something else. But you do talk about horror movies.
Crystals.
You cover horror movies. There's sound healing with sound and stuff. Now,
I'm standing in a sound bowl right now.
So tell us about Channel 29. And Blood and Popcorn and everything else that you seem to have going on right now.
I'll let you take this, T.
Okay, sure. Yeah, well, Channel 29 is our kind of digital network. It's part of our bigger company where we're developing like features and TV stuff. And this is our digital wing is Channel 29. And we've got a fun horror podcast that's coming up on its 50th episode, actually.
Really? Already?
Yeah, it's a video podcast on twitch.com/channel29. And most recently at youtube.com/@wearechannel29, and it's called Blood and Popcorn, and it's myself, Denise, and our friend Glenn, and we're just a bunch of industry nerds who talk about our favorite horror movies and some of our not so favorite horror movies, and have fun doing it. And yeah, we're also getting more into the scripted side of things. We just released our first horror short, Watch Till the End, which you can check out on our YouTube. And yeah, we're leaning deep yeah, into the horror scene. And love that community.
TJ, you directed that, right?
No, I wrote and I was in that. Oh, Denise who produced did? It and oh, Glenn directed okay. it.
Glenn directed it. Awesome.
Yeah.
I do want to, Glenn's not here, so I can say this, but I referred to Glenn for a while as grumpy beardy guy.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he would appreciate that, but I meant it with a lot of love. Glenn is one of my favorite people, and I have not gotten to know him very well over the years, but the little time I'm around him, I'm always in love with Glenn. So I got to hang out with Glenn at some point.
I feel like when I first met Glenn, he was being referred to amongst the cast and crew as like Ray of Sunshine or something. Cause he's, you know, God love him. He's got that. We love Glenn. Glenn is one of our best friends and like long time collaborator and fellow producer. And we've been working with him for many, many moons now. And he's part of our core three. So we love Glenn.
There's slight like outer shell of cynicism with Glenn, you know, like when you get a dipped cone, you know, ice cream cone, you just got to tap on that a little bit and you break it really easily. But yeah.
I love talking about somebody that my audience won't know, but this is great radio, but
if they check out Blood and Popcorn,
they'll get to know Glenn. I will share one quick story about him just cause you guys are here. So I can do this. The Why audience not? Doesn't oh, care. Yeah. They love this stuff.
Why not us?
So I worked very briefly with Glenn on my TV show Autobiography, which both of you also worked on parts of that show over the years. And Glenn worked on one episode with us where we had to go film out in like the desert somewhere for a day or two. And I got very frustrated at the end of our last night and it was getting late. I don't remember exactly what was going on, but I was very frustrated. And I don't remember what Glenn said to me, but he turned to me at one point and was like, Mikey's mad or something like that. And I was like, there was just a way he did it that was like, he gets me. He understands I'm frustrated. And there was something about it that I just found really kind of comforting and like, oh, someone else can understand what I'm going through right now. And he kind of teased me about it, which is my favorite thing. It's like, yeah, if I'm going through, tease me about it. I love that. So I was just that's like, amazing. I like this guy. I like this guy a lot. So anyway, that's my great story.
He tends to do that a little more with Denise than with me, but
yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely premium Glenn. He runs on sarcasm.
No, I loved it. It's like, it's a way to get me to like settle in with myself. I really appreciated it. So anyway, that being said, guys, we are talking about something rather serious and terrifying and somewhat scary. It is a murder mystery. Oh, wow. And this is a true Halloween story from Halloween night 1963. It's the death of a woman named Lillian Armstrong. Have either one of you heard of this before?
No,
but I'm excited to be in the 60s. What a great era.
I mean, you're going to set me on a rabbit hole after this.
Oh, good. Good.
Poor you're going to hear me type. I'm going to Google already.
Yeah. No, I love it. I love it. And let me specify as well before I dive into this. This happened in Newcastle in England. And there are some differences of what you might expect Halloween night to be like there versus here in the States. And I'll cover some of that because it is important to the story. So Halloween's history is an amalgamation of timeless traditions and a blend of diverse historical beliefs. The holiday can be traced back primarily to Ireland and the Celtic celebration of Samhain. I worked on that pronunciation, guys.
Good for you.
Because it's Irish, so it's not spelled like that at all.
Yeah. A lot of people lean into Samhain.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Halloween franchise.
Yep, that's right.
Donald.
Good connection there. Yeah.
Dr. Loomis. What was his name?
Donald Pleasance?
Donald Pleasance. I was going to say Donald Glover, but I don't think he was in those
movies. He was not. Nope, that was before his time.
Different time. But yeah, Halloween has a very interesting history, which I won't go into all of that tonight, but the nerdy part of me kind of wanted to. In the modern age, Halloween's traditions vary depending on location. So trick-or-treating has not always been the go-to celebration, but there has always been wickedness about. There are reports of violent crime, razor blades and candy, all those kind of things. And those reports are pretty much always over-exaggerated. And you guys probably know some of the stories behind the background of some of the fears around Halloween candy.
It certainly set parents a flurry.
Oh, yes. Yeah, when we were kids.
Candy as a kid. Yeah, like,
I was always like, checked.
Hammered into my head. I don't do it now.
Yeah.
I think it's just because I'm, you know, older and don't care as much about eating a razor blade.
I actually took some candy outside of the polling place the other day after I voted. So I was like, eh, it's fine.
Well, wait, but you're not saying where you took it from. Did they have it as like you voted, you get candy, so, or did you just steal it from somebody?
It was like when you walk in, each side has their own, you know, here you go, here's a quick candy guide. And they all had candy out there. And I was joking with TJ. I was like, I'm going to take candy from them. And then I was like, I already voted. I was like, nah, whatever. I'm going to roll the dice. So I picked up one of those sour, I think it was a sour straw. It was grape and it was delicious. And y'all, I'm still here.
Not me.
Yeah.
I was like, no.
Not taking that candy.
I don't drop political candy.
That's the quote of the show right there. Don't dress political candy.
That's going to be the next Halloween. Sorry.
Even though a lot of that kind of crime and candy and wickedness and pranks and stuff that happen on Halloween, a lot of it is overblown, over-exaggerated, but there are real chilling incidents on this holiday. And one such story that we're covering tonight involves a brutal murder that has remained unsolved for over six decades. Did I do my math right? I think so. Seems about right.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Blech. And investigators meticulously combed every inch of the crime scene, interviewed thousands of potential witnesses, yet literally no clues have really ever been shed on who could potentially have been the perpetrator of this murder. And that all is to set up the haunting night of October 31st, 1963 in Newcastle, England, and the murder of Catherine Lillian Armstrong. Yeah, there we go. That was my little intro for you guys.
Oh my gosh,
you guys
so
hooked?
Good.
Did I do
you
a good job?
You have such a soothing voice.
I'm listening.
Ooh,
number one.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mikey, I love you.
It's very like, I want you to work for Calm.
Nice. Well, I'm getting over a cold, which is, if listeners notice, I didn't have an episode last week. It's because I've been sick. So that probably adds to the sexy radio voice.
Yeah. I think I'm coming through. It's either cold or allergies, but I've been fighting for about a week and change now myself.
Yeah. Nice. Well, you sound good too, TJ.
Well, thank you. I worked on it a lot today. I wanted to make sure I was good for you, Mikey.
Yeah. Well, you get your stream tonight too. You got to warm up the vocal cords and everything. Yeah.
I just changed my voice at will. Is that good?
That is really good. I would stick with that. Yeah, that's great. So here we go. Halloween, 1963. I have to give a little background to this. In Newcastle, England, Halloween was a quieter affair compared to Halloween that we see here today and probably there as well. In fact, England at the time, Halloween wasn't really celebrated. Kids, though, would often sort of dress up sometimes or just play this game where they would go up to people and say, penny for a guy, give me a penny for a guy. And that's related to Guy Fawkes, the gunpowder, the failed gunpowder plot.
Right.
What's that?
Wasn't that the mask in V for Vendetta?
Yes, it is. Yeah, that's the Guy Fawkes mask.
It's November or something.
So it has to do with Guy Fawkes. I'm not British. I didn't dive into the Guy Fawkes holiday, so I'm not going to give a lot of information about it. I think it had to do, he was trying to overthrow the government to install a Catholic king, I think. I think that's who Guy Fawkes was. I could have that backwards. Feel free to write me at astudyofstrange@gmail.com and let me know. But anyway, the point is that they didn't really trick or treat like here in the States. They would ask for a penny for a guy. And there was Halloween mischief where sometimes they would take the money they would get and they would go buy fireworks, start fires, set off fireworks.
Those little scamps. Yeah. People don't go as hard as we do.
Yeah.
Like, we go hard for Halloween.
That's right. And so trick or treating, I looked it up. It didn't really catch on in the UK until I think the late 70s and early 80s. And the main reason I wanted to bring that up at first is because almost every article I read online when I was researching this is like, how come no one like none of the trick or treaters like saw who the killer was? Because there's trick or treaters everywhere. And it's like, no, there weren't. There weren't trick or treaters everywhere. So that's just something I kind of want to get out of the way before I dive into the story more in depth.
Did you say trick-or-treating didn't catch on until the 70s or 80s, even in America?
In the UK.
In England. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Trick-or-treating here started, I think, in like the 20s, 30s. Right? Yeah, and I don't think it was super popular until after World War II. So
that's
yeah.
right. That's right. Because there's some of my favorite pictures to look at are the creepy ass.
Creepy old.
We had super creepy costumes, but they went hard with the creep when it all sort of began.
And there were a lot of celebrations around it because, again, the history of Halloween does tie in with a lot of other celebratory things, and it has to do with the changing of the seasons and spirits that can only come out on October 31st on All Hallows Eve before November 1st and all of this kind of stuff. And so a lot of the scary costumes you see in those old photos, they weren't trick-or-treating. They were more like communal parties they would throw and things like that. So trick-or-treating kind of came a little bit later.
Or like scaring spirits away, maybe?
Yep. I think it depends on where you live, but it's either like blending in so the spirits don't get you or tricking them or those kind of things at all. There's a lot of cool stuff about it. And I apologize. I should do an episode about the history of Halloween. That's my next deep dive.
Let's do it.
I'll have you on deep. That would be amazing. Actually, that would be a lot of fun.
I would love it.
So meanwhile, in her home on 12 Goldspink Lane in Newcastle upon Tyne, district of Newcastle, lives 70-year-old Catherine Lillian Armstrong, who went by her middle name, Lillian. I go by my middle name. So, I'm a fan of hers. Way to go. And she was a retired headmistress. She had been retired since 1957 from the Denton Road Junior School. She was a proud, independent woman known for her regular attendance at church and choir practice. Choir practice, which happened to be every Thursday night. And Halloween that particular year was on Thursday, just like for us this year, guys.
What?
And I think this episode's going to come out on Halloween. So if you're listening to this,
we get a Ouija board and then just try and like
do it.
Contact her.
I mean, you can. I don't.
Yeah. We'll watch.
Far away from you.
TJ will not allow him in the house. I just want to get a vintage one. So
just build your own. That makes it even creepier. Build your own.
That is creepier.
Yeah. That's how you do it.
Human blood.
That's how you get it set up. That's a great way to power.
You need the human blotter.
Yeah. So Lillian Armstrong was a spinster, meaning she had no husband, no children, and she mainly kept to herself, but she was a person of routine. Besides church and choir practice, she would take care of her rather large home for a single person and keep her chores on schedule, those kind of things. Questions real quick. We've covered a lot. We've bounced around. I just want to make sure I'm getting everything or covering everything or I don't know.
I mean, listen, yeah, I mean, I'm entranced.
Old girl. And she's been, she's single. She loves church. She's got a big place and she's doing all right. So far, so good. She's living the UK dream.
There you go. So this Halloween night, how do I want to say this? You know what? Let's just say she doesn't make it through Halloween night. There's no good way to say it. There's no good thing. There's no nice way to say it. She did not make it through Halloween night. And the last confirmed sighting of Lillian was at around 6:30 p.m. when two children passing by her house spotted her looking out the window. Choir practice began at 7:30, but she never arrived. The next morning, November 1st, 1963, Lillian's cousin, Ada Ridley, arrived at Lillian's house at 10:30 or around 10:30 for a semi-regular visit. But Lillian didn't answer the door, and Ada noticed that the blinds were drawn, which was very unusual and not part of Lillian's routine every morning. Mm-hmm. Ada had a sense that something was wrong. She tried knocking. No one answered. She tried knocking more. She tried knocking louder. No one ever answered the door, so she went to the police, and they actually came pretty quick to check the house. They forced their way inside and immediately made a very grim discovery. Lillian's lifeless body was found inside her home near the bottom of her stairs. Her face was covered in blood, and there was a nylon stocking wrapped around her throat. She was obviously dead.
Those mid-century murderers really loved using nylon stockings. Good Lord.
Yeah, that's a good. I hadn't thought about that. That's a good point.
Well, you get them for like a farthing at the local.
A farthing.
What are they? I don't know what English money is.
A penny.
Usually
pence
they
piece.
I think get them from the victim, dear.
Well, yeah. I mean, you don't know. You haven't gotten that.
they could have brought their own.
Why are you assuming it was a male killer?
That's why I said they. I switched it up. You're
nice,
right.
Nice. Good job.
It could be anybody.
That's
it
right.
Could be anybody.
Just because it could be me. Caught, they're just smarter at killing.
I mean, listen, we could do an entire show about male versus female tendencies in the murder subject.
Yeah.
So,
and that's our special segment for today. Here we go. The male difference. Here we go. TJ and Denise, take it out. Let's. What are your points of view and your evidence on both sides? No, you don't have to do that.
I'm already collecting. You should be.
So.
Did you say teeth? I'm already collecting teeth.
Collecting teeth. Oh, God. Mm. This is a good Halloween episode. We're getting creepy already.
It's getting pretty gross. Yeah,
you picked two very creepy people for this.
We are dark.
Yeah. No, it's perfect. So at the crime scene, there were no prints, no footsteps. Nothing was stolen that anybody could tell. The investigators, Ada, everybody started looking around for stuff. They couldn't figure out anything. They couldn't even find a murder weapon. There was blood all around the house, and some of it had to have come from the killer because Ada hadn't been moved. You know, they can tell through crime science that she had been killed there and had not been moved, but yet blood was all over the house. Yet no fingerprints, no footprints.
What?
And you would assume that she was strangled to death, but after she was, they autopsied the body, her death was from blood loss from around, get this, 30 stab wounds around the head.
Wow.
Around the head?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Which I've never quite figured out because I can't find crime scene photos or anything like that. And again, call to listeners. If anybody has information like that, send it my way, please. I would love to see it. But it's almost like someone was trying to strangle her and in the, you know, she's fighting them off and then like a knife comes in and starts.
Okay.
I know it's not a visual medium, but I was reenacting the physicality of that for
really
everybody.
Well, I might add.
Thank you.
Was just wearing the stockings because it was the fashion at the time.
maybe it was just to keep her neck warm. Yeah. So police combed the house. They combed the area for a murder weapon. None was ever found. Still to this day, no murder weapon was found. The home had no sign of forced entry, meaning Lillian may have known her attacker or someone knocked at the door and let somebody in. And yeah, there's no explanation. Like, that's what makes this such a bizarre case, is there's no explanation. She didn't have any known enemies. There are theories out there that like, oh, she was a headmistress. Maybe she had like kids that didn't like her because she was the headmistress, but she'd been retired for like 8 years at this point?
Maybe they had just recently come out of a facility.
An insane asylum, perhaps?
Perhaps. Now, here's the thing, too. I don't know if I'm jumping ahead here, and not to sound too Criminal Minds about it, but...
Please.
It does, like, a crime of such brutality, that does lend itself more towards somebody she knew.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like...
It does in general, yes. There are, I know I'm jumping at a little bit, but there's not a lot of theories for the case, so I don't mind doing it. So one of the theories that people talk about is like an ex-student that held a grudge against her, and the night of Halloween when people are playing pranks and kids are buying fireworks, that's the night they're going to be able to pull it off. So that's one theory. Another theory is that it's somebody she knew because she let them inside. It didn't necessarily have to be an old student, and it could have been an acquaintance of some kind and somebody that had some kind of reason.
A lover.
Maybe both. Maybe it was an old student who happened student to lover. Be.
Holy crap.
And after she jilted him because, you know.
Or her. She just jilted them.
Yep.
We don't know. It was the 60s.
A bug just flew across my face. I wasn't reenacting the stabbing scene again, guys. I was.
Ooh, he's really into this stabbing scene.
Yeah, he's all over the place. I wish you could see it. Yeah, maybe it was like a former student who was like, you know what? You don't want me? No one can have you. And here's 30 some stab wounds around the head.
Ugh. Yeah, and there's a frenetic nature to that too, because there's like some kind of strangulation going and then stabbing, which I would assume was happening at the same time, but I could be wrong, which does bring up part of other theories, which is maybe it was multiple people, sort of a prank gone wrong on All Hallows Eve.
Sure.
Where they wanted to prank the old headmistress and like tie a nylon around her throat and think she's going to be killed and then laugh it off and run away. But it kind of got out of hand and she started fighting them. And
right.
You know, who
knows? Why there's other blood around, because they were injured.
They were injured. And that's that actually is an important thing I should just clarify. She did fight back in some capacity, because think some of that blood was theirs. And this is 1960. So if anybody's like DNA, blah, 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 they didn't have that back then. So there wasn't as much that they could do at the time.
Was there any collection of, I mean, I guess what would they have done with it, right? Because DNA was not a thing then, but did they collect any stuff like
I
that?
I would assume they did. So that actually is a nice tee up, because this was such a gruesome, brutal murder that the police in Newcastle were like, we need help right away. They didn't wait on it. You didn't have a local cop that's like, I'm better than everybody else. I got this.
I'll figure this
they
out.
Called in Scotland Yard, which you have to do.
He would be like, I'll figure this out.
Exactly.
Or, I'm sorry, Newcastleians.
Smoke the pipe.
Newcastleians. Well, no, I'm glad you're doing that, Dee, because this is when we're going to do a little reenactment here.
Yay.
What if it was like some sort of like class, like the whole class got in on it, and it was like a some sort of ritual, like a Halloween ritual.
Or like a murder on the Orient Express, where everybody's the killer. The whole neighborhood, even her choir members, like they're like, oh, we had practice. She never showed up, but they were there.
Yeah. Right. Maybe like she was going to get the Halloween solo. And they were like, we're so tired of you getting all the solos. He's 30 stab wounds around the head.
So excuse the sort of informal nature of how that's written. What we'll do, I'll read the scene descriptions, which is only like two or three. And we have a detective, which I guess they would call them inspectors over there, but a detective and an officer. Who wants what?
TJ, I'll let you choose.
No, ladies first. Listen, it was a female victim. I want to give, it's Halloween, and you, of all of us, in this two-person relationship, I think you definitely have more of an SVU criminal minds stance.
Well, you know what? I'm going to go with the detective.
Nice,
Denise
nice.
Always wanted the lead role, all right?
Well, look, I actually was kind of hoping for that, so I'm glad that worked out pretty good. So you'll be the detective. TJ, you be the officer. And,
do I need to be Scottish?
You can do whatever you want. You can even be from Alabama. This is a recreation. Bring your own creative juice to it.
Also, is Scotland Yard all from Scotland?
No. That's in, it's, their headquarters is in London. There's a reason why it's called that.
Dumb American.
No, that's all right. I don't think most people, I didn't know that forever. I think I learned because of like Sherlock or something. No, Scotland Yard is kind of like the main national police organization. And the hub is in London. And there's a reason why it's called Scotland Yard, and I forget what it is. I literally think it may be like the plot of land the original building was built on was Scotland Yard. So they call it that. I can't remember. I don't remember.
Respect tradition.
Yeah, there you go. All right, you guys ready for this?
Oh my gosh.
I'm ready. Are you ready, Dee?
I think so. I'm so nervous, y'all.
A local police officer waits eagerly by Lillian Armstrong's front door a few days after the murder. A black car pulls up and a pompous, I misspelled that, detective exits the vehicle and approaches the police officer.
No one would ever know.
I'm Inspector Reed, Scotland Yard. Let me inside.
Yes, sir.
They enter and the inspector combs over the scene of the crime, noticing blood at the base of the stairs and around the interior of the home.
Still no murder weapon?
No, sir.
I'm guessing no suspects either.
No, sir.
It's worse than you think, I'm afraid. This case reminds me of the late Mrs. Barrett.
Mrs. Barrett?
Good God, man, do you not know about the murder of Mrs. Barrett? A 71-year-old shopkeeper murdered just like this some 5 years ago. Near here. No suspect. No weapon.
Oh, my.
It's a good thing I'm here. Put the kettle on. We have work to do. I'm afraid you have a serial killer.
Dun, dun, dun. So,
can we just talk about how many times my accent changed in that? I'm so sorry, everybody.
I think that's traditional.
Look, when the show started, now look, I'm a classically trained actor. I am. When the show started, I was like, oh, these recreations are going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to nail them. It's going to be fantastic. Yet every time I ever try to do an accent, I have a different accent almost every three words. So I just stopped. I don't do accents anymore.
See, this is why we rehearse, though, right?
Exactly.
Because you have the script and you go over it over and over and over again and over and over and over again. And like TJ would tell me, he's like, your accent is switching a lot when we would do like D&D live play. And I'm like, listen, just go with it, okay?
Yeah.
Just go with it.
Just
I'm working on it.
Yeah. So I wanted to include this because there are some, even though it's kind of a hokey little scene, there are some true bits to it. They did call Scotland Yard invested a lot of resources, a lot of money, people, help to the local community to investigate this case. I actually do think it was Inspector Reed who was in charge of the case from Scotland Yard. And a Mrs. Barrett had been killed, a 71-year-old shopkeeper like in the scene, had been killed not super recently. It was like some years before this. But the initial investigators saw some commonality because no murder weapon was found. It seemed to be completely random. Mm-hmm. It's in the same area. And so they suspected it could have been the same killer, though it eventually, something came out along the lines. I couldn't figure out what the specifics were, but something have ended up coming out during the investigation that no, it was probably not the same killer.
Oh.
But it is an interesting possible twist to this story that makes it even more devilishly colorful.
Oh my. Listen, the original headquarters of the new London police force were in Whitehall, with an entrance in Great Scotland Yard, from which the name originates. Scotland Yard was so named because it stood on the site of a medieval palace that had housed Scottish royalty when the latter were in London on visits.
The more you know. That's great.
The more you know, yeah.
There you go.
I'm telling you, you can't. I Google. I'm just
Denise is not going to have this solved by the end of the
day. I hope so. That's the perfect world.
But I will know everything about it.
Good, good. We need it because this case is hard to even speculate because there's nothing. There's just a murder and it's gruesome and it's crazy and there's such a lack of information. But sorry?
Do we know exactly how many years prior Mrs. Barrett was killed?
I think it was 4 or 5. So it wasn't even that recent. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was still like they were pulling at straws. They were trying to figure out anything they could. So it's like, oh, that lady, you remember that lady from 5 years ago or whatever it was? Like maybe she was killed by the same person. What do we know about that? Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. They worked hard. This isn't one of those cases where it's like police just kind of like stopped. They worked really hard. They questioned thousands of people. And by January, they had interviewed 16,000 people.
Whoa. What?
So there was a lot of time spent trying to figure this out and talking to everybody, including the potential witnesses that saw her around 6:30. It was two kids outside, saw her in the window. That came from all these, all these interviews and stuff around town. But nothing, like literally nothing emerged that got people any closer to potentially solving this case.
What was the time of death?
I don't
approximated.
Think.
Before 7:30, right? Because that was the choir practice.
Yeah, it was before 7:30 is what they say. But I don't remember seeing a specific thing. But it had to be between that 6:30 and 7:30. So it was within that hour. And she wasn't found. What's that?
It was the two kids that saw her.
But how old were they? How old were they, TJ? We don't know. They could have been like 4.
Insinuate themselves.
4-year-olds. Murderous rampage. They can get it done. I believe in them.
You've seen tantrums, Mikey.
Yeah.
Oh yes. Oh yes, I have. Indeed. They are terrifying. So A few nights after the murder, a man called the police station and said that he was the murderer and then hung up. So he said, hi, that matter. I did it. And then hung up.
Excellent.
So that to me doesn't, like, I'm not one of those people that's like, oh my God, the killer called in, because some, you know, killers like the attention. So they want to do that. But that also happens a lot on murders and just crime in general, where people will do the fake confession or like prank call about it. So I don't really read too much into this call. TJ, it looks like you're going to say something.
Well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and I listen, I know this from experience, not murder experience, but like lying experience.
Thank goodness.
Sometimes like overtly telling the truth is a good way to lie. You know,
I know what you mean. Yeah.
In high school, when like my parents would be like, what'd you do last night? I'd be like, drank a bottle of Wild Turkey at Justin's. And I had. They were like, ha 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 ha. You're so silly. And they'd be like, no, that's exactly what I did. So, you know, I mean, I get that, like, probably statistically that's not how that works, but, you know, it was the 60s, man. It was wild. There could have been drugs involved. Maybe a bunch of kids got doped up on Mary Jane and psychedelics and were like, walking jack-o'-lantern. And then just, I'm doing the stab motion now, which you can't see because this is audio only, but. You know, stab for those listening at home.
Great description.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, that's tough. Cause you know, it is like a bit taunting too, like, especially if they're interviewing all these people and, you know, I mean, listen, if there was blood everywhere and they knew it wasn't just her blood, you know, I don't know, maybe someone did call in and they were like, oh, I did the matter.
Well,
It was me.
I
used to be good at accents.
I used to as well. I'm getting worse at it as I get older. I do think there's something to be said about the kind of random murder. Like that does appeal to me in a way of like a potential, like that to me seems even better than like a former student or something like that. Like to me, there's the randomness of it. And that's kind of what makes it hard to investigate. Mm-hmm. You know, so yes, just people going around drunk, high, whatever it may be, or just literally someone that just had bloodlust and was like, you know, some potential serial killer on the rise that just wanted their, you know, their kicks and try to get their first one in or whatever it may be. Just the randomness of this, I think, makes it really difficult to mind.
Have
to me.
There been any similar crimes since?
That's a great question. Not that I could find, but it isn't the easiest to research. Even though this was the 60s, which is, you know, modern age, and there's a lot of newspapers and stuff, and a lot of people have written about it, it got kind of difficult to find those kind of details. Like, I even wanted to find out who the kids were, because sometimes who witnessed her in the window, because a lot of times in these kind of cases, you'll find like 20 years later, they're like, some journalist will be like, oh, I wanted to find out who the witness was that saw, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And you'll see like follow-up interviews with them years later. And I couldn't find anything like that.
Listen, here's some more evidence to support the kids did it theory. So like, you watch horror movies and you watch like the Michael Myerses and the Jason Voorheeses and the Freddy Kruegers. And typically, and again, this was a different time, typically they don't, it's pretty precise. Like Michael Myers with a kitchen knife, like gets you in one, or might get you. It's not very stabby, 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 stabby. But if you look at like kids coloring, where it's just all over the place, it's erratic.
Yep,
it scribbles, it's here and there, it's everywhere. If you're a couple of kids looking at, you know, Menendez brothers, this shit, you know, that type of erratic, like stabby, 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 stabby behavior, where it's not like precision, like Michael Myers can get you with one blow. Like he'll put it, there's accuracy there. You know, there's precision, there's intent.
He's not,
but if
a
you're just going wild, trying to, you know, decapitate somebody with, you know, with stab wounds, you're, you know, there, it's a lack of finesse.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because you can look at it and say it's rage, you know what I mean? Or it's lust, or it's just
crime
violence,
of passion.
But, yeah, but like that kind of erratic just over and over and over again, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my two cents on why the kids murdered that lady.
Yeah, yeah. And look, if there again,
it gets sued for slander by the estate of these two children.
There were people out and about, but there weren't, just to reiterate, there are not trick-or-treaters out. Because again, a lot of the stuff I read is like, there had to have been, it was a trick-or-treater, or like they should have, like someone probably saw the killer because they were out trick-or-treating. They weren't. But there still were people out and about, because it is still a lively night. There's still people doing the penny for the guy thing. There's people going to choir practice. You know, there's all this kind of stuff. My point is that I do think the randomness thing kind of also leads to, someone could have just knocked on the door. I mean, like, oh, sorry to bother you, but you know, they just
excuse
a random
me.
Reason. But she was killed at the bottom of the stairs, which is by the front door of her place. So it could have just been coming into that little foyer entry area and something random and terrible. So, yeah. But the story does not quite end there. Thank goodness, because I would love to add something to the story. Apparently, there's a little more Halloween left in this story, because the house at 12 Goldspink Lane in Newcastle is apparently haunted.
Hell,
it's
still
there. I've pulled it up. And it was apparently, it was a sort of, what is not abandoned, but kind of. No one lived there for a handful of years after. I can't figure out exactly what year some people moved in, but by 1973, a new family had lived in the house. They allegedly, quote unquote, thought it was haunted and moved out.
They lutzed it.
Yes, exactly.
Lutzed big time.
Now, besides the typical comment or paragraph in articles or Reddit things about this case, I wanted to find more specifics about the hauntedness of it. Is it just people saying it online, like, "Ooh, the house is haunted," or like neighborhood kids? So there is a comment from a newspaper article in, I should have written down the year. I think it may have been like 1975 or whatever, but it was from a Mrs. Joan Black, who was a new tenant. And she told the Chronicle, this is a quote, "The family who were here before said the place had a ghost and it was spooky. They had sensed a presence and more than once had claimed to have seen a figure stood watching out the corner of their eye, but that there was no one there when they turned. We don't believe it is true, although the first lodger we had was convinced there was something unusual about the place. It was always at the bottom of the stairs."
We need to go. Lillian wants her murder to be solved.
Exactly. Yeah. Now get out the Ouija board. Come on, Denise. Come on.
I have one on a wallet. Does that work?
On a wallet? Like a tiny one?
Well, it's like a billfold more than anything. It's like a bigger wallet, and it's, you know, just got a design on it.
Yeah. The design of what we did. It makes sense.
That was a question I asked when I was more active on my social media. Glenn, TJ, and I were actually talking about it before we went to a haunted house. And I'm like, well, what about decor? Because it's all over the place now, right? You've got like, here's a charcuterie tray, and it's got a nice Ouija board on it, or like towels or stuff like that. Do those count too? And I want to know, Mikey, do you believe those count? And I want to know if your listeners think that counts as well.
Yeah, like make a planchette out of like some brie and a piece of pepperoni.
Delicious. Boy around there. Yeah. Well, look, my opinion is I don't believe in Ouija boards. I don't think they actually work. I think there's a lot of human mental aspects that go into making that work. But I love the history of them. And if I had a charcuterie board that was a Ouija board, I might be that. Like, that is going on my Christmas list. That sounds like the coolest thing ever. So that's my opinion.
These ghosts are delicious. Do you believe in ghosts?
I'm open to the idea, but I have yet to fully jump into that world. I've talked a little bit about it on my podcast, even this last month. I'm open to it, is my point. But all the experiences I've had in my life, and I've had some weird ones, I've eventually been able to explain through the real world things.
Sure.
But I want to believe, so I'm open to it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about you guys?
Firm believer. Nice. I think I might have mentioned this last time.
I think you did. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, because you've had experiences. I've never had something personally that really told me, okay, yes. But I think I believe, you know, I'm open to it too. I don't have firsthand proof or anything like that. Although I will say when I came to get the keys to this place and I started moving stuff in from storage, I did not like to go upstairs by myself at night. I just stayed downstairs.
Our place is mad haunted.
Yeah, TJ, like one day he was like, yeah, this place is super haunted. I was like, no, what? And then I've caught the cats kind of like looking up.
Oh, yeah.
At certain places. And I'm like, no, are you trying to tell me this is haunted? Don't tell me that. And I was like,
I don't want to look it up to see how many
have occurred in the world. Yeah. And you can. Amy caught me one night looking up the, like, has anybody died in our house before? Because you can just look that stuff up very easily. And she saw me before I like got it in. And she's like,
no,
you're never going to do that. And I'm like, yeah, maybe I shouldn't.
Don't should do that. Ever.
I'll stop right now. I was just curious. Yeah. But I, you know, I like the creepy stuff. That's why I host a show like A Study of Strange. So I feel that way. But no, I'm open to it. And the thing that I don't like about the very, very general term, but the ghost world, is I don't like when people are very specific about, like, ghosts do this. That's Samantha over there. They do that. And this is the way you communicate. And I'm like, no one knows 100%. If even ghosts are real, no one knows 100% what they're doing, how they exist, how they communicate. Like, I don't like people that get very specific about stuff, because I feel like those are usually the charlatans that are trying to make money on it somehow. Mm-hmm. And so if they are real, I think there's so much more to learn. I don't think anybody is that clued into it. So
because if you were.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm what the psychic community would call clairaudient and what my psychiatrist would call schizophrenic. so, you know, it really all depends on who you ask.
Nice.
Which professional do you want to go with?
Yeah, what do you want to, you know? like I've heard things, not seen them so much as like seen like ghosts and orbs and things, but my experiences have come from a ghost podcast, basically.
Like
visuals. I get the audio track.
Oh, nice. But
that's where my spooky stories all come from.
Very cool. Well, thank you guys for being on the show again to talk about it. It's a relatively, I wish there was more depth about who could have potentially killed her, but it is a fascinating mystery. And it happened on Halloween night, so I thought it was a good Halloween episode to have. So I really appreciate the time. And I will provide links to links to 29, Channel 29, excuse me. And Blood and Popcorn, anything else that you guys want to promote? Is there anything you want to say before you go?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, like I still think that maybe there, other than my kids' theory, maybe the inspector was right, but maybe it was like some sort of ritualistic thing.
Oh.
Just to add more spooky to the show. Like maybe this was like every 4 or 5 years, this cult or something needed.
Don't blame the Satanists.
You know, some sort of ritualistic sacrifice in a very specific way. So I'd be curious to know, like, if they moved on or if there's any like that specific style of erratic stabby head
or if about 5 years later there was another one that's just kind of random and strange.
Similar in kind. Yeah. It doesn't necessarily have to be the same person, but if it's a style, like if you have to like 33 wounds above the nape, you know what I mean? Like, you know, rituals are wild in general. When you get to the murder side of them, when you know.
It's, and that connects into Halloween nicely, because even, you know, that is in the UK, your history of the Celtic world and all of that. And, you know, maybe there is some kind of tie-in to a ancient celebration of some kind.
Right.
Yeah, man, go watch Halloween 3.
Here's the thing. I would be interested to know if anybody has done any research on, honestly, because you hear about serial killers getting away, generally speaking, because states didn't previously share information. You don't cross-reference. So if anybody cross-referenced throughout Europe, throughout even the states, because listen, travel was a thing, right? Maybe somebody was getting their feet wet. Like, that would also be an interesting kind of thing to look at. But I mean, wow, go. Oh, unsolved.
Yeah. But yeah, thanks for having us, Mike. This was fun. Yes. Glad to come on again and chat with you about this fun, spooky stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No, it was a pleasure to hang out with you guys, and I really appreciate it. And again, check out Channel 29, and I'll provide links to everything. Thanks, guys. Thank you for listening to our special Halloween episode of A Study of Strange. If you like all sorts of mysterious and weird and strange content, take a quick second, hit that subscribe button, or follow on whatever application you listen to podcasts, and take a quick moment to rate and review. It goes a long way to helping others find our show. You can also support the show through our Substack, which you can find through our website, astudyofstrange.com. Thank you, and everyone enjoy a happy Halloween.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.